Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
WGN, Jason Turner's here, Chief Investment Strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, John.
As goes Disney, so go the markets a little bit today. Talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, a little bit. We've seen a reaction to Disney's announcement on their changes to their Disney Plus streaming platform start to impact the stock price there. We've also seen a movement in PacWest shares as their most recent SEC filing noted that their deposits fell 9.5% in the first week of May. They were on that short list of banks that have been identified as maybe the next up against the wall from a turmoil perspective, extending the turmoil we saw in March.
Is that what's going to happen now? Each week we're going to hear about another bank. Is this going to be business as usual?
It may be a business as usual from a perspective of concerns. I don't think it's business as usual of what we saw at First Republic, and we get bank failures every other weekend. That's certainly not in the cards. We're watching very closely the situation with a number of banks, but the level of concern is not a systemic concern like we saw with the credit crisis back in 2008, 2009.
Talk to me a little bit about the Fed. What's your thought about their next move in June?
So the Fed has pretty clearly communicated through their dot plot and their summary of economic projections that a interest rate level of 5.1% is where they expect to be at the end of the year with the May increase of 25 basis points. That's where we sit today. With today's producer price inflation data, yesterday's consumer price data, and last week's employment data, it's likely giving enough of a picture to the Fed that they can stand pat in June and, for the first time in a long time, not move rates. And then the futures market agrees with that, now up to some 95% probability that the Fed stands pat and doesn't move rates at the June meeting.
I don't know when we start saying, hey, the interest rate news is good, but it used to be 9.5% not that long ago. It's sure a lot lower than that, isn't it?
Certainly is. You know, from an inflation perspective, with inflation now, at least the headline rate, nosing just barely under 5%, core is, of course, keeping up above that. And that's the area of concern for the Fed, that they're going to continue to watch and continue to be very cautious about what they say. But on a go-forward basis, inflation pressure looks like it's continuing to recede, both for consumers and for businesses.
Do you hear that anecdotally? Because when eggs were expensive and gas was expensive and cars were unavailable, it was just every day there was a story about inflation and how the price of everyday goods was very difficult for people to meet. And what are you hearing about that now?
I think you still hear that from consumers. The fact that the inflation rate, the rate of increase on a percentage basis is lower than it was a year ago, still doesn't take away from the fact that prices are much higher than they were a year ago in many areas that are important to every individual, no matter of your economic background. So food, for example, is expensive. Even though the price of food at home has receded just a little bit in the latest CPI print, food is still more expensive than it was a year ago. And it's going up at a rate of 5% a year instead of 9.5% a year. And that's still a rate that's above the average or the long-term target of 2%.
I think we have an obligation to ask everybody like you between now and June something. What are your thoughts? What's your optimism about the Congress and the president coming to terms on the debt ceiling?
I think we're seeing political theater at its finest in terms of a bit of brinkmanship being played between the two sides. The reality is that the debt ceiling has been in place since the early 1900s, and we have, without fail, raised the debt limit more than 100 times. I have the utmost confidence that eventually Congress will find some sort of middle ground and some way forward to keep the debt of the United States without default. But I think we're going to go right up to the line. This is certainly a difficult time for folks in the political arena and for us to just sit and watch. Mm-hmm. And it's probably going to be a last minute decision either to move that clean raise forward for a short period of time to work something else out, or more likely there'll be some agreed cut in spending in exchange for an increase in the debt limit.
I don't like them holding an atom bomb over the president's head and saying, otherwise, we're going to do this. But I don't blame them for trying to find some way to get Democrats to agree to some of the terms that they're asking for, which aren't crazy, like limits on spending. Now, maybe this is the wrong arena for that conversation to take place, but it would seem to me like the president could sort of have his cake and eat it if he said, okay, I will accommodate you. That'll play well in some circles, and he'll get what he wants, some sort of continuing funding for the federal government.
Yeah, I think we'll see in data, in surveys of Americans, that fiscal responsibility at the government level is something we're all largely in favor of. How they get there, as you point out, is really going to be the interesting path forward. Is this the right arena or not? Or is it later this year in terms of talks around the next budget?
Yeah, if the president held his breath to the very end, you believe that Republicans would have to concede. You would hope so. But you would also hope that the president wouldn't call their bluff and he would make some sort of concession. If I were in that room, Jason, I could resolve this in about 20 minutes.
I have the utmost confidence if you were in the room where it happened that you certainly could, John.
I know you don't believe that. That's Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management. Jason, thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Bree Fowler joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch from CNET, where she's a feature, or a senior, rather, reporter. Bree, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm looking at some of the things that Google is rolling out, and it looks like one of them is a feature like what we see sometimes where you're writing something in a doc or maybe on a text or tweet, and the AI will anticipate what you're doing. And so then it will say, hey, do you mean this or do you want to do this? Sometimes I like those features. Sometimes I don't. Catch me up on what Google is doing here.
And sometimes it's a little creepy that it knows what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But what Google has now, what they're rolling out with the help of their AI, is a help me write feature, which will create emails for you based on the prompts that you give it and text messages that you've sent during previous conversations. So it'll be really interesting to see how this works out.
I guess so. I'm not going to judge it until I see it. Sometimes those things are very helpful, but sometimes the distraction is not worth the help. What about their folding phone? Is that coming out now?
Yeah, this is something that had been rumored for a very long time. Samsung has had their foldables for a while now. Now it's Google's turn. And the Google Pixel Fold will have a 5.8-inch external display and a 7.6-inch folding interior display. And like Samsung's phone, this is really pricey. It's going to cost $1,800.
Do you like this thing? Have you seen it? Foldable phones, is that where we're going with iPhones and smartphones now?
Well, Apple hasn't really said yet whether it plans to roll out something like this. It's been rumored since Samsung's was rolled out that Apple would do this too. I've tested Samsung's before. I haven't seen the Google Pixel yet. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, not only how functional it is, but how durable, because Samsung had a lot of problems early on with its foldable, with the hinge and it breaking and things getting stuck in there and stuff like that. So hopefully Google has worked out the bugs.
What's the news on Twitter right now?
Well, Twitter seems like there's always something. And this could be a good thing. They, as they had promised a while back, are starting to roll out encrypted messaging within the direct messages. And in theory, this would let you send messages to people that you talk to on Twitter that are end-to-end encrypted. And that means that Twitter wouldn't have access to them. Nobody would really have access to them. They would be completely private. This is how messaging services like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and Signal work. But Twitter is only doing this now for its verified customers. And there are a couple other little catches and hiccups, too. We're not quite sure how good the encryption is just yet and whether it's actually going to be locked down enough to kind of meet the same standards that you would with WhatsApp and Signal and those kinds of competitors.
Ah, so that commitment to security and safety will cost me $10 a month or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's going to get folded in there. I mean, and it's possible they might extend it to everyone eventually. This is something that, you know, other companies do for free. I mean, WhatsApp, they don't charge you extra for that. And, you know, in some ways it makes it easier for the company too, because if they don't have access to your messages, they don't have to worry about handing them over to law enforcement,
yeah, right,
or prying eyes, things like that, or getting hacked.
Did I see the Tucker Carlson show, which he's now says he's going to do on Twitter? I thought I saw something where Elon Musk said, wait a minute, I'm not sure we're going to do this. Are they going to... I didn't know you could host a show on Twitter. Can you just talk about that?
Well, what he could do is have, you know, post videos, do like a Twitter Spaces kind of thing and have it at a certain time. You know, obviously it's up to Twitter whether they want to allow this. And it's also worth mentioning that Tucker Carlson is still under contract with Fox, even though he doesn't really work there anymore. So if this would be kind of, you know, barred by a non-compete or something like that, that's also an issue.
I'm also just imagining his audience being sophisticated enough or disciplined enough to follow him and watch him regularly on Twitter, on their phones or whatever.
Well, I mean, if you look at Twitter these days, there's a lot of people that buy into what he's selling on Twitter. So, you know, it might actually be a good platform for him. Now, whether that's good for Twitter, I don't know.
Anything else on the tech front you want to throw in here before I say thank you?
Well, your Disney Plus streaming may get a little bit more expensive soon. During the earnings call yesterday, Bob Iger, their CEO, said that they're going to start adding Hulu content to Disney, but that means they're probably going to start raising prices later this year. They haven't said by how much. If you use their free version that has ads, prices won't be going up.
I won't hold you to this for me, but what's the one app you would pay for? Streaming service, if you only paid for one.
Oh, I have to admit that I need to cut back on my streaming services. I have kids, so I have Disney Plus, but I do get it for free through Verizon. And that's very helpful. And they throw in Hulu and ESPN Plus, and I think that's how a lot of people actually consume that content is, you know, they're not necessarily paying for it, and it's all coming in a nice, neat little bundle. But my husband loves ESPN Plus. He watches a lot of college baseball, and I watch a lot of NHL hockey that's out of market. So that's definitely a must for us.
How about our Connor Bedard story? Are you loving that, or are you one of those people out of Chicago who's hating the Blackhawks right now?
I was watching the draft lottery, hoping that my beloved Detroit Red Wings would move up, and they ended up staying at number 9. But I think it's a great market for him, and it's going to be much better than if he had gone to Anaheim.
Yeah, no kidding. Or Columbus.
yeah.
Well, okay. Well, that's a good way to end this conversation. We can still be friends then, even though you're a Red Wings fan.
Yeah, well, they're in the Eastern Conference now, so it's not like when I was a kid and Chicago was basically a crosstown rival.
I think it's better for the NHL. Even if you all hate us more, it's good for the league and certainly the team to have him in Chicago. That's my take on it.
Yeah, definitely.
Bree Fowler, who knew? Senior reporter and hockey head at CNET.com. Thank you, Bree. We appreciate your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Dupree is the president of Kelly Professional. KellyServices.com is the website. These people have put out a report about the workforce here and I think abroad, too. Thanks for joining us, Tim. How are you today?
Very good. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I did see the word global. Is this a global work report or a U.S. one?
It is global. We surveyed 1,500 executives and 4,200 talent across 11 countries.
What did you discover about the workforces right now?
Well, we talked to executives and workers across multiple industries, automotive, manufacturing, life sciences, retail, just to name a few. And we looked at examining the ability for companies to attract and retain their workforce. And what we found is that employers are really struggling to build a resilient workforce. What was surprising to us as we started to look at the findings is that there's a significant mismatch between what employers think is happening and what's actually happening from the talent's perspective.
How so?
Well, what we found is about a third of the workforce is planning to exit within the next 12 months. And what employers or what executives think the cause is all related to compensation. And while compensation is definitely an important factor, the number one and number two reasons that talent said that they were planning to leave, number one, poor work-life balance, and number two, the lack of career development. And like I said, while compensation is important, it definitely wasn't the first and second on the list.
What does work-life balance mean? Is that work at home or is that something else?
A level of flexibility, meaning that you have the ability to work from home when you need to. What we're finding is while workers appreciate the fact that employers may want them to go back into the office, they still want a level of flexibility, especially when it comes to child care or dependent care.
Is it this way in other countries too? Can you sort of tell us where the U.S. fits?
We did see that. What's interesting is a lot of countries didn't have the infrastructure that we have and we enjoy in the U.S. to allow for flexible work arrangements. So there's less work from home in some of the countries, at least those that we surveyed, than what we saw in the U.S. So the dynamic showed up in the survey related to that regard.
You almost wonder if there's any way employers could have anticipated the upside to letting workers be hybrid before the pandemic. Was there a push or a movement afoot to do something like this in 2019?
Oh, I think a number of employers, Kelly being one of them, had a work from anywhere program that we announced well ahead of what happened during the pandemic. Fortunately, that allowed us to be able to quickly pivot to work from home arrangements. But as you know, a number of employers, as we've started to progress out of the pandemic, have had really strict guidelines that by this date, you're going to have to go back into the office. Other employers have been more flexible, and I think that's what we found in our report.
I saw a story in, the Times maybe today or recently, but it had the amount of available office space, unused office space in New York City is equal to like 47 Empire State Buildings. There's just a massive amount of office space that isn't being used, and one wonders if it will ever go back to that level, you know?
Yeah, true. It's interesting that you say that. There's actually a rise on converting some office space back into residential. So there's that phenomenon too.
Well, so what are employers supposed to do then? First of all, not everybody can be hybrid if you're in manufacturing, say.
Right.
What do you all offer advice for employers out there?
Yeah, so what our report found is we looked at the ability to build a resilient workforce, one that's sustainable. And what we found is that there's really three critical aspects of making certain. So when we looked at what was in common with those companies that had really started to see success, had better attraction rates, had better attrition rates within their workforce, we found three things in common. One, they really had built an agile-based workforce, meaning they had the ability to quickly scale up and scale down based on the circumstances, whether it be macroeconomic conditions around them or consumer patterns that were shifting. The second thing that we found that we're talking to our company, our clients about and other companies about is making certain that we have the right mix of talent, meaning do they have the right skills for today and for the future as we introduce more automation, whether it's in manufacturing or recruitment process outsourcing type initiatives as well. And then third, making certain that companies are embracing diversity, equity, and inclusion. Making certain that all employees are respected, valued, and we're bringing all ideas and putting them on the table. So when we think about what a resilient workforce looks like and those employers that are actually doing really well at attracting and retaining their workforce, those three elements are what we found in common.
I wonder how well the companies are able to train the managers to execute some of these ideas, right? I mean, it's one thing to know it, but it's another thing to actually get people to embrace it and accept it. You know, getting it down chain is probably easier said than done.
Absolutely. We're seeing a significant amount of requests from our clients to partner with us on ways to just educate their managers on the current state of the workforce and where we expect it to go in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. I think recognizing the patterns and the evolution of what talent is expecting is the first step.
So Kelly Services is the website. Kelly Professional is the company you're president of. So does Kelly Professional staff professional positions in the workforce? Is that what you do?
We absolutely do. Everything from manufacturing workers to HR, accounting, finance. I have in my group, but Kelly Services as a company also provides support for scientists, engineers, IT, and substitute teachers. So the spectrum is very wide in terms of the services we offer.
Well, with unemployment about 3%, I'm not sure, do people desperately need your services or do they not need your services because there are jobs for everybody out there?
Well, you're right. Unemployment's still remarkably low. In fact, there's two jobs for every job seeker right now. What's interesting is what talent's looking for is the right match. And because they know that we partner with clients and we understand the cultural aspects of the companies, they want to make certain that they land somewhere where they can not just have a good compensation, but we're somewhere where they can thrive. And like our research shows, somewhere where they can develop their careers long term and have good balance. And they depend on companies like Kelly to make certain that that match works for them.
One last question, Tim. What are the jobs or areas that you find most plentiful, that there's most opportunity for workers?
Yes, for sure. In the Chicagoland area, we're seeing a decent amount of maintenance technicians, CNC operators, machine operators, forklift drivers, as an example. But across the country, Kelly specializes in life sciences, pharmaceuticals, manufacturing, and automotive. But, you know, just speaking about Chicago, I would say it's more in the skilled trades area, especially from a warehouse and manufacturing perspective, and in pharmaceutical for sure in Chicago.
Yeah, boy, I've seen pharmacies that are struggling to keep up. One last thing. What's the price range for those mechanical or warehouse jobs?
Yeah, well, it's gone up, as you know. Our average wage in the Chicagoland area is around $23 an hour. It's actually up 12% since 2020. So it continues to climb. We anticipate that continuing to rise, probably more moderate than it has over the last couple of years, but depending on the job. But that is the average, Bob.
Tim Dupree is the president of Kelly Professional at KellyServices.com. Really interesting stuff today, Tim. Nice to meet you. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
Let's continue with the business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Groupon says it faces serious financial challenges and there are ongoing concerns about whether the company can stay afloat. The Deals and Coupon Company has warned in a filing with investors that because of ongoing cash outflows and operating losses, it may not be able to meet its obligations over the next year. The situation raises substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue as a going concern. Groupon shares have fallen as much as 17%. The company says it's evaluating several strategies to improve liquidity. New York's Levain Bakery, like Chicago, Cranes reports the company's planning for a second location just 6 months after opening the first. The new Levain Bakery is set to open this fall in a 1,400-square-foot space at 408 North Clark in River North. The first location's in the West Loop. The River North location will be the company's 13th nationwide. The stars of the show are giant, chewy cookies, but they also serve up bread, baguettes, and other pastries. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
And here we are, a third of the way through May, and it's a big month for food. It's National Hamburger Month, National Salsa Month, National Salad Month, and too many more to mention. And related to food, it is Celiac Disease Awareness Month. And more about that after I tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, celiac disease is triggered by gluten, a protein found in some grains, including wheat, barley, and rye. Some people are gluten-free because it's the in thing to do. Some people are sensitive to gluten. And then there are those like our very own Steve King.
I don't have a gluten sensitivity. I have an absolute gluten intolerance. It would affect me like rat poison.
And where there's Steve, there's Johnny.
A doctor actually told us that you're so sensitive that a crumb of gluten is going to make you very, very sick.
They thought I had cancer. I was losing 12 pounds a week.
Luckily, they found a European doctor who suggested a test for celiac disease.
Came back positive. He said, well, the good news is steaks, potatoes,
and chocolate.
You're good to go. The rest of it, we had to research.
And they learned a lot, including...
It's not uncommon for celiacs, women who are undiagnosed, to have a difficult pregnancy.
Chessa Rollins can relate to that.
I was having issues with my pregnancy. We couldn't figure out what was going on.
Chessa is a chef.
The name of my restaurant is Chessa's Bistro and Bar.
It is on West Addison in Avondale. It's all gluten-free and specializes in Cajun and Creole dishes.
We just want to make good food, and it just happens to be gluten-free.
One of Steve and Johnny's favorite restaurants is De Luciano's in River Grove. Luciano and Rosa Libreri have 7 children. 4 have celiac disease.
So it was very hard for us.
And the gluten-free recipes developed by Rosa and Luciano became part of the restaurant's menu. But that wasn't enough. They expanded and built a separate kitchen.
We have a separate oven. We got a separate, everything separate.
It really makes a difference is there is no cross-contamination. And De Luciano's food is so good, you're making me hungry just talking about it.
And there are many other restaurants in Chicago offering gluten-free dishes. But Steve and Johnny caution that you make sure the kitchen is truly gluten-free. And if you want more info,
go to stevenjohnny.com, and we have a whole section with gluten-free recipes and information.
Thank you, Steve and Johnny.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
So what do you know? This is a sign that the restaurant business is back. There's another restaurant opening in the Fulton Market District. This is the Oakville Grill and Cellar. It's an RPM production. The partner at RPM Restaurants, the wine director at the Oakville Grill and Cellar, is Richard Hanauer. Richard, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks so much for having me. I'm wonderful. Yourself?
I'm glad to hear it. So you guys opened in April, right?
We opened at the very end of April, 2 Tuesdays ago, on the 25th.
It's described as a kind of a Napa Valley comes to Chicago experience. What does that mean?
You know, I think that we've had the unique pleasure of going out to Napa so many times for so many other restaurants. And we really, after falling in love with the wine, started falling in love with the meals and realized that it wasn't just grapes that were growing so well in these wine zones. And we wanted to bring those same vibes back to Chicago of some really, really fresh food and some really appropriate wine to go with it.
I know you've got like 750 different wines on the menu there, but without going through all of that just now, tell me about the food. So what do we eat when we go there?
I think that the chef team has done an incredible job really bringing the style of the Bay Area to the restaurant and substituting it when appropriate with some local ingredients as well. Some of my absolute favorites, I think that the Wagyu hanger steak that we do is really, really impressive. It's really nice to do a really fine, really fine steak and doing it with a very, very interesting cut. I couldn't be more proud of the work that the culinary team put into doing the fried chicken. It really, really reminds me of some of the better versions from the South. It seems a little too approachable at times on the menu, but I think it's a great addition to every single table that we do. Yeah. We have beautiful, beautiful bread service, great appetizers, shareable items. The menu is very, very approachable.
The fried chicken comes with a potato salad made with pepperoncini and grain mustard, as well as a bottle of house-made pepper vinegar for guests to top their bird. I like the sound of that.
Well, it's going to be a lot better than a bottle of house-made wine. That would be for sure.
So what's the deal on the wine then? Is it expensive? Is it exclusive? What have you got there?
I think that when one travels to California for the vineyards, it is really the myriad of every wine drinker from an introductory to a seasoned collector. And we wanted the menu to very much so reflect that. So there is a great collection of Napa stalwarts, some truly cellar-worthy wines, Cabernet Sauvignons and Pinot Noirs and Syrahs. And then so proud of not just leaving the traditional varietals and blends for some new and upcoming and intriguing styles and grapes, but also producers all over California. And then really fun, we were able to leave, the north coast and head a little bit further south, a little bit further east, and oftentimes a little bit further north as well, to really encapsulate all of the great growing zones of California into the wine menu.
One last note, I'll just mention, you guys do one-hour tastings for groups up to six Tuesdays through Saturdays in the afternoon and evening. That sounds like a nice feature.
That is one of our favorite parts of the restaurant. We have this beautiful tasting experience. We call it the cellar door. Every month, we partner up with a different California winery, and we recreate the tasting menu that they're doing in California at our own table inside of the Oakville. So we're going to start off with Robert Simsky Vineyards. We do about four seatings a night. The flight is identical to what you would get at Robert Pinsky down in Stag's Leap in Napa Valley. And then after a glorious month, we're going to rotate on to our next vineyard.
Let Us Entertain You Restaurants brings you the ethos of Napa Valley to Chicago at the Oakville Grill and Cellar. It's on Green Street in the Fulton Market District. Good luck to you. Sounds terrific. Thanks for your time, Richard.
Thanks. Always appreciate it. Have a good one.